Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived?
Either Adam 74, Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. We have a very special guest today, a very special program. We are joined by the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, a tremendous longtime activist, democracy advocate, and all-around wonderful human being. I'm going to give you a quick overview. We will also be on the Progressive Radio Network Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, as this is being recorded, at least for the first hour. So we ban those four-letter words that George Carlin so explicitly laid out. We are going to, the great Henny Tripp is going to introduce Keith, and then we are going to, Keith and Henny are going to have a conversation with questions that most about Minnesota, and then we will transfer over to Joel Siegel, my co-conspirator on these calls, who is going to take over the questioning and the discussion with Keith, and then somewhere around the half hour, we're going to introduce, Joel is going to introduce Alan Minsky and John Brakey for some questioning, and then we'll open it up for the questions for the group as a whole. We currently have 70 people on the line. We usually start at 10 past, so some of our regulars are probably going to be a little late, but we moved it up for Keith. And Keith, we're very, very honored by your presence. I want to introduce Hetty Tripp, who set this up. I've known Hetty for more than 40 years, even though she's quite a bit younger than I am. She is an elder, or I consider a youngster, but she considers herself an elder with the Minnesota Coalition of Asian American Leaders. She's lived and voted in St. Cloud, Minnesota for the last 32 years, where she's a retired lecturer of ethnic studies, and she currently facilitates the anti-racist workshops at St. Cloud State University. She's also a magnificent human being and a great activist. So Hetty Tripp, if you will take it over, please, and do the honors for introducing Keith Ellison, we would be greatly pleased.
Hi, Hetty.
Hi there. Thank you. So let me tell all of you a little bit about the Honorable Keith Ellison. From 2007 to 2019, he served on the U.S. House of Representatives, where he championed consumer, worker, environmental, and civil and human rights protections for all. While in Congress, he founded the Congressional Antitrust and Consumer Justice Caucuses and served as co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which he helped to build to more than 100 members. Since January 2019, he has been mine and Minnesotans' attorney general. He was lead prosecutor in the matter of the May 2020 murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, and he led that team to successfully convict the former Minneapolis police officer, Derek Chauvin, on a charge of second-degree unintentional murder, which resulted in the longest sentence of any police officer for killing a civilian while on duty in Minnesota. Attorney General Ellison is a people's lawyer, and he is helping Minnesotans afford their lives and live with dignity, safety, and respect. His core values are equity and inclusion. At this point, I would like to field the first question, if that's okay with the co-slugger.
Absolutely, please.
All right. In my experience, it has been consistently easy and accessible to vote in St. Cloud, Minnesota. St. Cloud is about 70 miles from Minneapolis, including language accessibility. So I'd like to ask you, if is this a statewide experience for all Minnesotans, including BIPOC folks? And do you, as Attorney General, think that there is voter suppression, gerrymandering, redistricting issues in Minnesota?
You know, when you compare Minnesota to other states, I think there are some states that have greater challenges than Minnesota in terms of voting rights. But I think that in Minnesota, we got our own things to be concerned about. I can tell you that in Minnesota, I had to bring a lawsuit against a group from Tennessee that was saying that they wanted to come up here and have armed protection of voting booths, right? So they wanted to have guns standing outside of voting polling places, all under the auspices of protecting voters' rights. Well, I told them that's intimidation. That's voter intimidation. We won't have it. So we sued them. And, you know, we had to do it to two different companies and had to tell a third, don't do it. And so we've had that. We also had some laws on the books that really were not amenable to people voting as much as they should be. So under the Federal Voting Rights Act, it says that you can get anyone to assist you with your ballot that you want to. That's your right. You want help with your ballot because you can't see or because of whatever reason, you can have somebody help you. But Minnesota law said you can, if you have helped three people, you cannot help a fourth or a fifth or beyond. Three is all you can help. Well, that's obviously a conflict. So when this was pointed out to us, we said, absolutely, this is preempted by federal law. And we entered into a consent judgment to dispense with that law. So that's sort of, you know, another thing that we did. We've also had some reports around, you know, Native American reservations where there have been intimidators who showed up at like Red Lake and White Earth and stuff, places like that. So we are on the alert for people trying to mess with and intimidate people out of their vote. And we'll be, I anticipate that this will be a greater challenge as time goes by. When it comes to issues of redistricting, I think what we've really got to do is make sure that we are working hard to get people out to vote. The mechanics of voting are one thing, but getting people to fully exploit their right to vote is another thing. And I think that some of our tactics to get the people out to vote could be better, quite honestly. I think we need to make sure that we're engaging people to vote 365 days a year. We can't just get started after Labor Day. That's no good. We've got to have a system of communication and engagement all the time. We can't just engage people to vote because we want them to vote for us. We've got to engage people to vote because that's how you have a participatory democracy. And, you know, I can tell you that this is quite a fight that goes on every single year. So in Minnesota, we do have some laws that I think inhibit and interfere with us maximizing participation. We have a law that says that your civil rights, including your right to vote, will not be restored until after you've done all your time on probation or parole. Well, that could be years after you've gotten out of prison, right? Or maybe you never went to prison at all. You got convicted of a felony, but you're still on probation or parole for a long time. That means you cannot vote. This obviously hits all communities, but it hits certain communities harder than others. And that's a big deal. That's a battle we've got to continue to fight. And we need legislation to change in that regard. So there are a number of fronts that we're fighting on. We're vigilant. We'll never back down. We're always going to be pushing forward.
Okay. Henny, you're temporarily muted. Can I jump in now and introduce to Keith Joel Siegel real quickly to introduce?
Hi, Joel.
Keith.
Good, Keith. I wanted to get.
I know Joel Siegel.
Yes, he knows you. We wanted to get your feet wet here with Henny having introduced you, and we now want to introduce you to Andrea Miller and Ray McClendon, who are going to talk for three quick minutes, but who were instrumental in the Georgia miracle, or we now call it the Georgia way, and have a ton to say. So Joel, let me turn it over to you for Ray and Andrea, then we'll come back to Hetty.
First of all, welcome Brother Keith Ellison, one of the greatest members of Congress in the history of Congress. And you look very good, by the way. You look great. You know, you don't age. You look great. So 365 days that we have to engage voters, Andrea Miller is going to talk to you about her plan, which is actually being implemented, and she's doing just that with voting centers. And Andrea, can you please tell my favorite congressman what you're doing?
Hey, your favorite congressman and mine. Hey, yeah. Keith, it's been a while. So Anyway, I don't know if you remember, I had a plan in 2015 to open democracy centers. Well, we've got 10 of them now. So we've got a number of them in Georgia. We are in rural areas and we are in urban areas. And we work 365 days a year. So, like Reverend Jesse Jackson in Operation Breadbasket, when we're looking at the holidays, we are helping to feed people when people tell us they're hungry. Out in Hawkinsville, where they had a feeding program once a month, they've expanded it to 365 days a year. They opened a food pantry, and your payment when you go in with your shopping carts, because they want people who come in to have dignity, your payment is they check your voter registration and make sure your registration is up to date. And then if they're having events, they let you know about events and hopefully you sign up for one of the events. That's the same thing my ladies in Roanoke, Virginia, which is down in Southwest Virginia, did. They brought people food and they said, hey, I'm Zeta. I live over on Crawford Street. So letting people know I live in the same neighborhood that you did. Nobody imported me. I live right here. Are you getting the $3,000 per child that is part of the American Rescue Plan? People are like, what? And that immediately opens the door and starts a conversation. So we have brought the American Rescue Plan, the infrastructure bill, and when we pass it, Build Back Better, we're bringing that into the neighborhood, talking to people about things they care about. We develop literature that reflects what they said were their concern, not something that somebody somewhere else made up. So delighted to see you again. And hey, Minnesota looks real good on you.
Thank you, Andrea. And then Ray McClendon, the political action director for the Atlanta NAACP, one of the architects, Keith, of the Georgia Miracle, where 19 NAACPs and grassroots organizations across Georgia went to the polls in record numbers. Ray was one of the chief architects of that. He's continuing now with a foundation to get African-American community organizers who get the vote out funding so that the actual can do what you're talking about, 365 days a year getting the vote out. But Brother Ray, welcome.
Thanks, and it's an honor to be with you, Mr. Attorney General. And just real quickly, what we decided to do was after seeing that Trump won Georgia by 211,000 votes in 2016, and then Stacey Abrams lost Georgia by about 55,000. So we saw the numbers changing. And what we decided to do was to say, let's identify what the black voter turnout was. And we still had numbers that were in the upper 40s for black men and around 65-70% for black women. So we said, if we can get black voter turnout up, we can make up that gap by 2020. So we identified around the state, even though we were the Atlanta NAACP, we identified that there were about 17 counties that represented 77% of the black vote in Georgia. By the time we added a few more counties in, it was close to what Joel just mentioned, about 83% of the black vote in around 20 counties out of 149 counties in the entire state. So we decided to collaborate with other NAACP chapters in those other counties other than Fulton County where we are. And we also had been working over several years to bring together all of the other grassroots organizations, civic engagement organizations, like all the chapters of the Divine Nine, Black fraternities and sororities across the state, the Masons, who are very big in Georgia and all of the counties across the state, along with other groups, some of which you've heard of, like New Georgia Project, which was one of the organizations that Senator Warnock was previous chair of. We brought all of those organizations together and came to become more effective and more efficient in communicating with one another, coordinating activities. And that was a tremendous catalyst toward improving the way we penetrated to get the Black vote out. And that's part of what made us successful both in the general election and then, of course, in those two historic Senate runoffs in January, where in an unprecedented way, as you know, most of the time in a runoff, the percentage turnout goes down dramatically from the general to the runoff. We were able to get 95% of the Black vote back out for the runoff. And it was because of that concerted effort with folks like those organizations I just mentioned. And because of this platform, we met great folks like PDA, like Center for Common Ground and others, and all joined together in this effort. That success then led us to the point we need to document what was done, how we all came together, how we set ego to the side, came together to collaborate to be much more effective, and understand that we can replicate this in other states, especially across the South that have significant percentage of voters who are people of color. And so we decided to take this approach, and with the help of people like Joel and Harvey and others, we are looking to put together a foundation and an operating organization where we're going to get these groups that are the heads of the Divine Nine, the heads of the Masons. We have counterparts in each one of these states. And we want to inform and educate on how we were able to get the vote totals up in Georgia and use those same approaches and innovate beyond those approaches to be even more effective. We should not be losing Senate races in North Carolina and South Carolina and elsewhere when we have that vote. We know that you were an advocate for this kind of operation when you were active with the DNC. We think we can take that, but it's going to take the grassroots level effort. And that's what we want to champion and have it as a bottom up, as opposed to a top down approach to voting rights advocacy and getting out the vote.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Ray and Andrea, Keith, I'm sure you know, are extremely important, having pioneered what we called the Georgia Miracle, now the Georgia Way. And the two major accomplishments that we want to come out of these calls, and by the way, there are well over 100 people now on the call, is that number one, we flipped the style of campaigning in the progressive movement and the Democratic Party from top-down TV-oriented campaigning to grassroots relational campaigning. And number two, really number one right away, is to get the two national voting acts passed. Those are our critical agenda items. Hetty, do you want to jump in, or Joel with another? Hetty?
I'll be very quick before I give it back to Joel. I just want to reiterate my appreciation for Keith and the AG's office work, because I have children and grandchildren in Minneapolis. And when I had heard about the radical right militia bringing guns to polling stations, you know, as a parent, grandparent, I was just afraid for the safety of my family. And you had spoke to that earlier in terms of legislation. Now, we have posed a number of questions to your office, and some of those answers I will get to this group. But I think what is critically important now is how do we move forward on the federal voting rights legislation that will affect everyone, including Minnesotans. And that's where I will give this over now to Joel. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you. And Hetty, thank you so much for setting this up.
Thank you, Hetty.
Attorney General Keith Ellison.
Hey.
I know I'm supposed to call you Keith. You told me that. Call you Keith.
Yeah, that's what that's what everybody calls me.
Okay, Keith. first of all, when Keith first ran for office, I went to a meet and greet fundraiser for him. And I heard him speak. And then I went to Representative John Conyers' office and I said, I just met the future first African-American Muslim president named Keith Ellison. And when you were in Congress, I thought you were by far one of the most effective progressive members of Congress that I've ever seen for 13 years that I worked there. You had the best staff, I think one of the best staff. And you would pull me to the side if my collar was up. You'd used to fix my collar. And but you are so missed, by the way, you know, in Congress. I think when you left, there's a void that has not been filled. All that being said, thank you for what you did with George Floyd. Jerry Blackwell, I went to law school with Jerry. We graduated from the same class. If you could please give him my love and my best, because I was
absolutely.
Like, and I saw your fingerprints were all over that case. So thank you for your brilliant legal work. But yeah, the first question would be, we know how important the John Lewis Voting Rights Act is. And in this incredible book that I'm reading, that I don't know if you can, oh God, it's called My Country, Tis of Thee, My Faith, My Family, Our Future. In the first chapter of the book, you talked about liberty, that America has not quite lived up to its promise of liberty for all. And if you can't vote, clearly we don't have liberty. The question, Keith, is how do we get the grassroots and members of Congress and our civil society, especially dignitaries, celebrities, to really put forward a grassroots campaign to get the John Lewis bill passed? Your thoughts, perhaps, on a carve out of the filibuster and the filibuster in general. How do we impact cinema and Manchin? You worked there for years. Any suggestions about what we need to do to get those bills passed and then also S1, you know, the For the People Act. Thank you.
Yeah. So what I think should be done is that if you have 100 people on this call, and everybody on this call has contacts with everybody, and Andrea has a bunch of folks, and you got a bunch of folks, and we reach out across America. We get a nice little card, like about this big, outlining what the bill would do, and then we tell everybody we need you to knock 25 doors to tell them about this and to send a letter in to your member of Congress and your senator, and we just inundate. And then we say, we're going to do a call drive. Then we're going to do a press leaf. We're going to do a group of ed board visits, and we're just going to create a stampede to make sure that folks do this. And so that's the thing. Going to people and saying vote ever all the time, that can get old for people. You got to give them something new all the time. You got to say, okay. Because people want to know, well, why am I voting? For what? To get that guy in? I don't care about that dude. I don't even think he cares about me. Say, no. To get this bill passed. To get this bill passed. We need your help. We need your letter. We need your phone call. We need you to show up at this meeting. And then we might even need to load you up on a bus and we're going to Washington. And so you do that all over the country. People feel that win. And then next thing you know, you got the thing passed. You know, I serve with Sinema and Manchin. I don't know about Manchin, but I think Sinema does care what people think about her. You know, I think she got herself out over her skis. She thought she was going to be some bipartisan champion. And so she insisted upon this bipartisan thing for its own sake. And what she didn't realize is that she was trying to bring the extreme unreasonable together with the reasonable, which leaves you with nothing. And so, you know, I think that you just keep up the heat. And then you remember that, you know, these elections come every 2 years, right? And if you can't change the people's minds, you just change the people, period. I think that it's important to understand that, you know, that that no Democrat should be able to feel like they're just going to be there forever. You know, they need to set up and prove it. They need to set up and serve every time and without fail. And, you know, that's not a bad thing, you know, to say to a Democrat, you know, you need to bust your tail a little bit because that's what this moment calls for. That's all right. I mean, who in Congress is like, no, I just want to chill. I don't want to do anything. No, then you're in the wrong job. We need people who want to be energetic and in motion. So I think that's what you do. You start out national campaign and cards, make it simple, and turn it into a movement and turn it into a social activity. And here's the important thing about the work that you all are doing. Knocking on those doors, Andrea, Ray, what you're really doing is you're creating a relationship. Ooh. You can, if you tell me that I have bad breath and need to, you know, work on my BO and we're friends, I'll be like, oh, good looking out. Right? If you tell that to me and you don't know me, I just think you're a hater and you're trying to tear me down. But if you, but a relationship is critical. And, you know, you will see the groups like the Democratic National Committee, and this is not a critique of Jamie Harrison. He's a friend. But you'll see, you know, you'll see the Democrats, right, spend a lot of money on, like, focus groups on what the message is. Here's the message. Be present in the lives of people. Be present in the lives of people. Show up. You know, I mean, let me just say, Joel, if I was in the hospital and you showed up to say, brother, how you doing? And you sat with me for a minute. Maybe I wouldn't even feel well enough to talk. But we just sat there for a minute. After I got better and I was out, I'd feel like my man cared enough to calm down. But if you say, oh, you were in the hospital? Yeah, I heard you were sick. Glad you're fine. That person just told me, I actually really don't give a crap about you. You understand what I'm saying? See the difference? Presence matters. Presence matters. Are we present in the lives of the people we say we represent? I guess we can answer that ourselves. I mean, you cannot have a campaign season party and expect to win. You can't. And if you look at Republicans, they got relationships. What do you think all these church meetings are all about? I mean, you know, they are building relationship. That's how come their tribal attachment overrides any fact you can throw at them. They're like, you know what? Trump's my man. He may be a crazy dude who says crazy things, but I'm voting for him. You know why? Because I think he cares about me and people like me. Do the Democrats, does the base we're trying to get to vote for us believe that we care about them? Mm. Or are they just a means to an end? I want to get elected so I can have a pretty well-paying job, get on TV every now and again, so vote for me so I can be your congressman. People are like, you know what? I don't have time for that. I wouldn't get out of bed for that. I'm not standing in no line in 12 hours for that. So, but if I believe that you care about me and we're in this together, I'll stand in the line for a week for you.
There you go.
You know,
the question is, how do we get the progressive movement and the Democratic Party to flip from the kind of top-down campaigning they did in Virginia to the kind of campaigning that we won with in Georgia? How do we make that change in the progressive movement
and
the
Democratic Party? What I would do, Sluggo, is I would redefine what it means to be progressive. Here's a slogan that the kids use. Anything done for me, without me, is being done to me. If you're doing something for me, but you don't include me, then you're doing something to me. You want to do something for me? Ask me about it. Include me in it. And that's got to be a core way that one is progressive. And if you're like, oh, we're going to give you healthcare. We're going to give you $15. We're going to give you. I'm thinking like, can I participate in my own liberation? Or am I just your bit player, right? So that's the thing. That's the thing. We've got, so here's the good news. I started pushing this when I was at the Progressive Caucus, that look, we've got to have a new ethic of progressive campaigning, not just an agenda, but an ethic of progressive campaigning, which is the very center of it is inclusion. And we want every Progressive Caucus member to go up 3% every single election. If you increase your voter turnout every 3% every single election, you're going to help state legislative candidates win. You're going to help city council members win. And remember, under Obama, we lost 900 state legislators.
Wow.
Under Obama, we lost 900 state legislators. And a lot of state houses flipped. And after they flipped, they used their power to gerrymander. And so now we don't know how we're going to get certain places back. You got places like North Carolina, Wisconsin, Michigan, where the overwhelming number of people vote for Democrats, but the Democrats don't have a majority anywhere. Redistricting. So what we've got to do is use redistricting as an opportunity going down right now. And we've got to really say, look, this is your interests are on the line. We're in a relationship. We care about you. So that's the thing. So then the tool of grassroots engagement gets easier because all you got to do is knock your building, knock your floor, right? So now it's not that hard anymore, right? And I'm going to tell you something else it does. It brings people together. We're more connected than ever with these damn phones. And we're also more isolated than ever. What about the lady who lives at the end of the hallway, who nobody really knows her very well? But if you knocked on her door and said, would you like to volunteer with us? Man, you might have just found the best volunteer you ever meet. She's going to bring her banana bread down to the call, to the phone bank. You know, she's going to tell you about how she worked on the McGovern campaign. She's going to tell you that she has a son who lives in San Diego and he calls, you know, whenever he can. But then you will become her new family and she might meet some friends there. And now that she's in a quilting group, you will have solved a problem of loneliness for people who feel disconnected from their neighbors.
Exactly. I think that woman's name is Eleanor Rigby, actually. Listen, Keith, it's fantastic. I want to mention, I'm going to turn it back to Joel. We're joined by the Reverend Rodney Sadler. Rodney, it's great to have you on.
Awesome, brother.
Lori Grace, a fantastic election protection advocate and a supporter of our cause. Dennis Bernstein is on. Dennis is a nationally syndicated radio host. He does the Flashpoint show at KPFA in Berkeley. A tremendous friend and a great progressive and very powerful in the radio world. Thomas Pogge from Yale. It's great to have you on. Joel Siegel, you're gonna introduce us to two more great activists who are gonna ask a couple questions.
Yeah, I also want to say when Representative Ellison came to Congress, there used to be maybe 5 to 10 people who were in the Progressive Caucus that met regularly. By the time he left, there were over 100 or close to it. So thank you, Keith Ellison. I think you made history. Thank you. John Brakey, one of the most, actually an historical figure, one of the leaders of the election protection movement, is going to ask the question about what do we do regarding recounts that we see that as a Republican strategy, it's without any legal standing, say we lost the election, no proof of it. He was there, one of the most important folks in Arizona to monitor it. But without further ado, John Brakey.
Thank you. And welcome, Attorney General Keith Ellison. It's a real honor. My name is John Brakey, and I'm the director of Audit Elections USA for the last 17 years. We are currently in litigation protecting public records in Arizona and Florida that could easily prove elections are real or not by utilizing ballot images. I had the honor to meet you twice over the last 5 years, once in the Phoenix at the DNC winter meeting 2017, and when you ran for the DNC chair, and several months later in Minneapolis, Minnesota at a Democratic convention in early August, where you were the featured speaker and you were great. Most recently, I've led efforts in Arizona to help ensure that there was a strong progressive election protection presence during the recent presidential recount in Maricopa County, which is the second largest voting district in the U.S. In that audit, I was deputy Senate liaison to former Secretary of State Ken Bennett. We both worked closely together in the same foxhole, fighting the cyber ninjas. Yes, the Republican Party appears to be moving in the direction of having recounts whenever they have lost an election. I went into the Arizona audit with an objective mindset, only to learn after a few weeks that I was dealing with parrot election experts who are the best talkers, but the worst producers. They pretend to know what they're talking about. They keep real experts out of the process because they're afraid of being exposed, then claim that the election was stolen and ask for funds to protect the Republic. It's easy for a grifter to raise big money when you have an ex-president claiming that the election was stolen and publicly states that the grifters are correct. I learned that grifters don't hold press conferences. They only do infomercials. For example, the movie they produced, The Deep Rig, in the very beginning was pure propaganda. And all three Arizona Senate hearings, never facing the public, the media are asking questions. I and many other leaders in the election protection movement fear that this bogus recount, even if there is no real legal standing for a recount, i.e. evidence of fraud or fake ballots, will become the norm of the Republican Party in local state elections and a march to authoritarianism that could concern us all. Clearly, there needs to be federal oversight of these soon to be frequent recounts of elections. To my knowledge, there's no plan by the DOJ, the Department of Justice, to intervene in these recounts since they were not present at the recount in the Arizona recount. Right. As to my question, what do you think of the idea of having the Department of Justice prohibit a new federal policy regarding election recounts or an executive order by the President Biden making mandatory for there to be federal oversight of federal recounts? Perhaps there could be a letter from AG Merrick Garland requesting serious consideration of these kind of policies and for the state AG to request a meeting, a Zoom meeting with the AG to set up a AG task force on recounts and voter suppression. Also to discuss the AG strategies to combat voter suppression laws being passed across the nation, more media appearances, et cetera. How about the establishment of a House of Election Protection Defend Democracy Caucus in order to have the Hill briefing and official hearings and judicial committee regarding voter suppression and recounts? Thank you, sir. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you, John.
I love it all. It's great.
And Keith, it's fantastic. Hey, John Brakey with Ray Lutz pretty much was the guy responsible. They were the two who really exposed the cyber ninjas in Arizona. There's no overstating the importance of their work. They, and nobody knows more about recounts and audits than John Brakey.
Well, John, thank you so much, man. You know, all I want to say is I agree with every single word you said. The question is, what are we going to do to support you? And I think what we need to do is we need to organize progressive lawyers all over the country. Maybe they need to do some CLEs with you, learn how to do it. I mean, you can't do everything, but you can teach some people who can do it in their own local community based on, I mean, but like, if you would be willing, what if this, John, could you write me a letter basically saying what you basically said? So like, you need, you know, and what I'll do with the letter is I'll try to get a bunch of AGs to sign it and we'll send it to Merrick Garland.
And you know, thank you. I would love to do that and just state that, yes, you know, what we do is so important in this group here is, that you're meeting with and the people on this call, because, you know, we are heavily involved in many states now,
right,
you know, trying to turn this because we know that transparency is the solution. And I quickly mentioned ballot images. They are so important. You know, the actual act of voting is the secret process. Counting is a public. Ballot images are what I'm fighting for to be released publicly. We are fighting cynicism in this country like never before.
And John, we want to produce a definitive document on how to correctly do recounts and audits. And as an attorney, a state attorney general, this would be incredibly important if you were involved, because John and Ray and a few others have pioneered the science of recounts and audits. And this is absolutely has to be a federal standard. So thank you. I'm so glad you asked John to write your letter. And if you can help us pioneer this documentation, it would be a huge breakthrough, believe me. So thank you so much, John. Joel, you have Alan to introduce?
Yeah. Alan Minsky, the president, executive director, CEO of Progressive Democrats of America. By the way, Keith was very instrumental when PDA first came onto the scene in Congress. He hosted the PDA all the time and was a major advocate of anything that the PDA did. I just want to make sure everyone knows that on this call. But Alan, you've done so much to grow PDA over the last several years, make it diversified, but can please, the floor is yours.
You know, I did come with a question, and you asked the question, as did Hetty, about communicating with Manchin and Sinema and the urgency around the two bills in front of the Senate. So in the wake of that question having been asked, I simply want to say it's an absolute honor to meet you. Coming into the executive directorship of PDA as you were leaving Congress, I can tell you that the two campaigns that everybody within PDA was most proud of was, of course, launching the Run Bernie Run campaign, drafting Sanders to run as a Democrat, and in support of you as the head of the DNC. Yeah. And just from this call, I mean, I'm going to ask for the recording of this. I'm speaking at a conference in Massachusetts with the political heads of Our Revolution, Working Families Party, and DSA over the weekend. And I'm going to just listen back to what you were saying, the whole part about the engagement with our elected officials, that there needs to be a dialogue. When I did come in as executive director, we launched a congressional liaison program where Representative McGovern said the most powerful instrument a left has in this country up against corporate lobbyists are the actual constituents lobbying their representatives. And we've launched it this year. It's going spectacularly well. Of course, it's a lot of Zoom meetings and almost no in-person meetings. But I just want to say, just from this call, your brilliance on these matters, I look forward to being in dialogue with you in the coming weeks, months, and years. And it's just an honor to be here with you, sir.
Thank you, Alan. And it's an honor to be with you, my brother. Let's just keep on getting doing it, man. I mean, this is the most important moment to be organizing across this country. This is the most important moment. This moment in which people, feel that they've won, and this moment in which the right wing is very fired up. This is the moment. This is a key moment to put your foot on the accelerator organizing.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you, Alan. Alan is a brilliant organizer and a fantastic asset to the whole progressive movement. We're still well over 100 people on this call. And I want to recognize James Fukuda. James is one of the great supporters of our movement. And, one of the things we talk about so regularly, Keith, is how do we get the Democratic Party, which we really wanted you to be the chair of, to flip its style of organizing from top down? I've mentioned this before, too relational. We have consensus that relational is the way to go. How do we get the Democratic Party to stop spending so much money on and to start on advertising and to start paying their canvassers, for God's sakes?
Honestly, I think that you can't really wait for the Democratic Party. I mean, I think PDA and other groups just need to start doing it and then inviting the Democratic Party to start doing it. If you prove concept through your own success, they will monkey see, monkey do. Yeah. They will do it. They will do it if they see you doing it. I mean, the thing is, they've already got, I mean, let me tell you, and Joel knew Joe Crowley very well, and we all did, and he was liked by many of us, including me, but he got beat by AOC. Why? She did grassroots organizing. She used to carry these shoes around proving, look how many doors I knocked. And so it is clearly the way forward. And so here's the thing. If somebody is doing something that doesn't seem to make any sense, you can either think that you're a genius or you can think that there's some hidden reason they're not doing what is obviously needs to be done. Right. And my belief is that there's a certain segment of the Democratic Party that wants to keep a static, solid, predictable group of people who they can reliably count on to turn out to keep them in power and keep them in policy. Let me tell you, you've got to go with what you got. You can't really wait on the Democratic Party. And for another reason, because here's the thing, what happens when you knock on doors, when you engage people and have a relationship with them, they talk back to you. And what do? They tell you what they need. They tell you what they want. They tell you about their hopes, their desires. They tell you about how their son, a smart boy, but he had to join the army because you just didn't have the money to send him to school, right? They tell you about their daughter, smart young woman, but she had to delay her dreams because she just couldn't afford it. They'll tell you all this stuff. And what do you do? So what's my point? Here's my point. The reason that the Democratic Party campaigns the way that it does is it is trying to avoid the relationship because it wants to just do a one-way campaign with a TV ad.
That's right.
So you can't tell a TV ad about how you're worried about getting cancer because your mom got breast cancer, you know, at the same age you are now, and you don't know what you're gonna do, right? You can't tell a TV ad that you know you really want to start a small business, but you know it seemed like all the public money goes to the biggest ones, right? You can't tell them that your dairy farm is about to go under, right? A TV ad isn't listening to you, but a person is listening to you. So the reason that they don't campaign the way that we all know they should isn't because they're not as smart as us. Clearly they are, right? But what they're saying is that they like it how it is. And what we got to say is that we don't, and we're going to go organize the people, and you're going to lose unless you adopt our way, right?
You got it. So I want to call on Joel here. I want to mention we have 50 more people on the call than we did when we started. So, Keith, you're quite a draw. Joel Siegel, can we go back to you?
Yeah, just this is from a very popular citizen from Minnesota question. What can we do to help you, Keith, with voting rights in Minnesota? Is anything that we can do to help you? And nationally, too.
Yes. In terms of voting rights, the most important thing to do is hold a lot of forums about voting rights. Invite me to some of them. I'll be happy to talk there. But the key is engagement and connection among people. That's the key. And that's hard. That's not like a one and done. This is what I'm proposing is labor intensive. You will get sick of it, but it's the only way, right? Is to engage people one at a time, small groups, large groups, and listen to them about what matters most. That's what you can do. Go get some Facebook friends, go get some whatever, however you connect people, and then hold that Zoom meeting. When the COVID gets better, hold an in-person meeting, but let's sit down and talk about our country, our state, and how we're gonna make it better for everybody together. There's no other way.
Well, we are producing, our calls are producing an important document. I wanna call again on Ray McClendon, Keith, so you know exactly. Ray and colleagues conducted a series of interviews with people in Georgia to talk exactly about what you're talking about. But we have a tangible experience where not only did it work, it changed the world, because without those two senators in Georgia, God knows where we'd be. Ray McClendon, do you want to give Keith the detail on the document that you're producing? Are you with us, Ray?
Yeah, I'm here, and I just want to say that everything that Keith has been talking about here, we tried to do many of those things from a practical point of view, and they work. And the relational organizing, as an example, a week ago Saturday, we passed out over 900 turkeys to some community members to help them for Thanksgiving holiday. That's the kind of example that we did throughout the 2020 election cycle. And for the runoff, we passed out Christmas food boxes, because as you know, we were in the height of the pandemic at that point. And that made a difference. And I love your point, because people didn't want to talk to us about voting when they were hungry, when they didn't know how they were going to feed their family for Christmas. So maybe we'll have a shot at talking to them once we've helped them at their point of need. And to have trusted messengers out in the street that they know, they talk to, has made all the difference in the world. So over $500 million was spent in Georgia for the runoff. We could have used just 1% of that. If we could have just gotten 1% of that to go to progressive grassroots organizations, we could have made an even greater difference than we did. And to the point about these democracy centers that Andrea is doing, we're seeing that work across the state in her centers and in similar vehicles that people have from different organizations, many of which have been around for years, that have the credibility, that local credibility that you talk about, because they've been in the middle of the community doing the work day in and day out. And that's what we're trying to get folks to understand, is if you invest in groups like this, then you'll have the credibility you need, and they will listen to you when it's time to turn the boat out.
And I think you should, Keith, your office should connect with Ray, because the document on the Georgia Miracle is both a book and a documentary film. It's of tremendous value. It can be spread around, and with your involvement, that would really magnify the distribution and the impact of this document on the Georgia Miracle. Andrew, did you want to add something to that while we got Keith with us to tell him about the documentation we're doing and the interviews you conducted?
Well, we had a great time talking to the groups that worked in Georgia. A lot of my staff had fun and got a chance to talk about the type of phone banks we ran and the fact that we postcarded all the BIPOC voters in Georgia. That was probably close to 4 million people twice with very important election information. So again, one of the things that we work on doing is make certain that voters have the information that they need to vote. You can't just tell older voters go vote when all the information lives on the internet. You need to be prepared to do some hard work, look it up, and tell them exactly where the voting is now. Because we don't all get to vote where we voted for the past 10 years. It moves around.
Right, and just like the document we want to put together on recounts and audits, we want to have this Georgia Miracle document to spread all over, and with your assistance, Keith, and cooperation, it would really be a big plus all around. So
Well, let me tell you, I just sent my email to Andrea and Ray and whoever wants to stay and be in communication. I'd be more than happy to do that. Is it the Center for Common Ground? Is that the document?
Yes. I think, yes. And we are really strongly pushing these democracy centers. Howie Hawkins is on from the Green Party. They run a democracy center in Syracuse. And we're hoping to have a network of democracy centers in place at least in every county in the United States by the fall election in 22. It would make a huge difference. Joel?
Now, I just want to say Keith invited me and the late, great Representative John Conyers, the author of the Medicare for All Bill, H.R. 676, that Keith was one of the major champions of, to Minneapolis to do a town hall meeting. And before the town hall meeting started, Keith was talking to about 30 or 40 of the key leaders in Minneapolis. He was there for 2 hours. I remember it like it was yesterday. That's what Conyers did as well. Then when Keith did the town hall, there were over 1,000 people. And there was great media coverage. And Keith, what I wanted to ask you, how do we get other members of Congress to do what you and John Conyers lived by, and that's relational organizing? Because I think you and Conyers mastered that. And then I know there are going to be, you know, other questions from people who are listening, but how do we get other members of Congress to do what you've already mastered, so to speak?
Well, you know, I really think that Pramila Jayapal is open to it. I think that Mark Pocan is open to it. I know that Ilhan Omar is, because she's one of my folks, right? Mm-hmm. And so the thing is that we have a group that wants to do it. I know Jamie Raskin is open to it. You know, we just got to engage them and say, look, guys, to be Progressive Caucus members, it's just not about standing for some menu of progressive issues. It is also got to include the way that you engage people, right? It's got to include the way you engage people. Remember, don't do anything for me. You know, do it with me, right? Don't do anything. I don't need you to run out and get me healthcare. I need you to work with me to get us healthcare, right? And if you see it that way, that's one thing a lot of progressives have got to just really, we've got to really, really talk to them about it, because like it is a turnoff when you act like you've got everything to offer and I have nothing to offer. People want to feel like they're part of, you know, of their own situation getting fixed. Even if all they did is wrote a little letter, they feel like, hey, I did something to help my situation. It wasn't, you know, and they'll be grateful that you engaged them. And again, there's a book called Bowling Alone by a guy named Robert Putnam. And it's about social isolation. Mm. You can literally use politics to build community. You can use politics to build community. I've done at least 3 weddings because people working on my campaign falling in love and having babies, and they asked me to do the wedding for them. I'm like, okay. But my point is, you're building community through politics. How many people involved with this group right here, right now on the phone tonight did not know each other 6 months ago, 8 months ago, but you've joined, you've got friends now. And if you know, I heard somebody do a birthday shout out. That's building community. And there needs to be somebody who does birthday shout outs, wedding shout outs, babies being born, just so we can feel closer to each other than just the, the business stuff part of it, you know?
Absolutely. And since you mentioned birthdays, I'm going to tell you all, you're all going to be celebrating my birthday, which is New Year's Eve, December 31st. So when you're out getting drunk, drink me a toast, all right?
There you go. Lift your glass.
I'll be 76, so there you go.
Congratulations, brother. Hey, man, you don't just wake up one day 76, man. That's a whole lot of life you're living, brother.
That's a very diplomatic way of putting it.
Well, we all hope to get to be a fine age like you are right now.
Dorothy Reich, you're with us from California. Dorothy?
Hi, Keith. I don't know if you remember that we met down in Orange County.
Absolutely. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I mean, as well as can be expected, all things considered here.
Yeah, we've been through a lot, man. We've been through, it's been a crazy time.
So a couple of things that concern me. First of all, gerrymandering. And the question is whether we, all the get out the vote that we do is going to help when there's so few districts that are actually in play, so that no matter how many people we get out to vote, they're only going to be able to vote in the districts where they've been stuck. And the other thing is that the coverage the Democratic Party is getting in the media has been really bad. They're getting their talking points from who's that idiot down south, James. What's his name? Carville. Those kind of people. And they're just parroting James Carville, the Third Way, all these people saying that the progressives are costing the Democrats votes when the progressives are the only ones that are getting the Democrats any votes. So, and it just goes on and on. You see it in every major newspaper. I don't know what we can do to counter that. It's so between those two things, I feel kind of hopeless, and I'm hoping you can give me some hope.
there's every reason to be optimistic. I would say there's every reason to be optimistic. I mean, look, I mean, the bottom line is we did get rid of Trump.
Was there an Eve, or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.